Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. Well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution as we talk about why America is different than other nations. Why is America different? Because we have a constitution. Unfortunately, they do not teach this in school. They do not teach this in college. They do not teach this in law school. Because there are a group of people who don't believe in the constitution, who hate the concept of individual freedom from the common man. And so they've done everything they can to destroy our understanding of what the Constitution is about, but you could very well summarize it in the simple statement. It was an effort to limit the power of the central government so men could be free, because our founding fathers knew that liberty and limited government were synonymous. But there are people who want total government, and many of them, of course, work through the various covert organizations we so often talk about. And they want to do, as Richard Gardner, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, wrote in their magazine, Foreign Affairs, and in April of 1974, they want to do an end run around the Constitution. And they, of course, by the fact that the people don't understand the Constitution, they'll not understand what's wrong with the federal government in facing a financial crisis, has to simply begin to regulate and control every aspect of our lives and then begin to move America away from sovereignty towards this one world government. Well, we need to understand what our Constitution says. It is the law of the land, and we have people at the highest level of our government who are lawbreakers, and nobody can call them on it because they control the media as well. And with that as the background, Pastor David Whitney, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Dr. Stan. It's always a blessing to be on your show and to be able to talk about these principles, because it is true that most Americans have no idea that the majority of things being done in Washington, D.C. are actually a violation of the law. The bailout is just one recent example of theft by another name. It really is theft from the American people. But if you don't understand what it was our founders structured when they put together our Constitution, then it's easy to believe the lies that are promoted in every, just about everywhere you turn, all the major media outlets, all the newspapers, all the major magazines, just about everywhere other than shows like your own, proclaim a message that this is all right, this is good. In fact, we want this. We want the government to rescue ourselves and banks and automobile manufacturers, and on the list goes.
And of course, the very people who created the problem, and they created it intentionally, now are going to solve it by taking away our freedom. But so many people have been so badly damaged, and so many people are going to lose everything they have. The people will be grateful to our masters for offering us the opportunity, perhaps, to at least have a job or some sort of an income, or at least something. The government is going to provide us with jobs. The government is going to provide us with a better life. They may even let us have a home for a while. Go right ahead, David.
Well, to understand what it is our founders wrote, it takes a bit of a step backwards to get into their worldview and to understand their worldview. And it's not all that foreign if you really begin to look at it and look at it from their perspective. And that's what we hope to do this evening, is to share some of that with listeners and give them an understanding that our founders were basically coming from a biblical understanding of law and government. They saw the Word of God as the supreme law of the land, and that law was what informed them as they structured our Constitution and our rights.
And of course, they structured it based upon the writings of Baron Montesquieu, of Blackstone, of John Locke, and one or two others. These were the people who inspired our founding fathers. And most people listening to the program have never heard of them. Why? Because you're not supposed to. You're not supposed to understand our wonderful Constitution. David, go right ahead.
Well, to take a step back before we actually look at those three influential writers that very much framed the background in which our founders built the our form of government, we need to really understand that our founders were coming from a biblical, that is, a Christian worldview. And immediately there's people who object and say, wait a minute, I've been told all of our founders were a bunch of deists, they didn't believe the God of the Bible. And as a matter of fact, many Christians and many pastors promote this idea that our founders were not Christians. Well, to answer that charge, first you have to answer the question, what is deism? Deism is a belief in an absentee God. That is, they believe that God is the creator. He created the universe, and by creating the universe, he established absolute unchanging physical laws and absolute unchanging moral laws by which the universe is governed. So there's the law of gravity, and there's the law of mathematics and chemistry, and then there's the moral law, that thou shalt not kill, and so on. So the deists would agree there is absolute moral standards, there God's law, the creator of the universe. But they would say that God, once he wound up the universe, the picture is often given of a clockmaker, he makes the clock, he winds it up, gives it the energy to go, and then he steps away from it and has a hands-off approach from there on. That is, he never intervenes in his creation, he never responds to his creation, and he's no longer involved in his creation personally or in any way, shape, or form. So deists would be similar to true Christians, Orthodox Christians, in this, that they would believe there is absolute law, the laws of nature and nature's God, but they would disagree about God's involvement in the universe. And, you know, in the 18th century, when our founders were framing our form of government, deists were very, 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 very small minority. There were very few true deists anywhere in the world. More of them in Europe, but very few of them in America at all. One of the writers who's written on the beliefs of our founding fathers is M.E. Bradford. He's written a book called A Worthy Company. Actually, we carry that at our web store at Institute on the Constitution if people are interested in that. But it's interesting, he walks through those who were part of the Constitutional Convention, the 55 delegates total. 28 were Episcopalians, that is, they were members of the Episcopal Church. And unlike the Episcopal Church of today, which embraces all kind of heretical things that are really not Christian at all, the Episcopal Church of that day held to a clear Orthodox Christian standard. You could not be a heretic and be a member of the Episcopal Church. So 28 were Episcopalians, 8 were Presbyterians. Likewise, the same way, you had to adhere to a very clear Orthodox Christian statement of faith. Likewise with the 7 Congregationalists and the 2 Dutch Reformed and the 2 Lutherans and the 2 Methodists and the 2 Roman Catholics. There was one founder we don't know enough about to know what his religious belief was, but certainly he was a Christian.
There was certainly, David, is going down the fact that, you know, almost all of the founders were Christians. They were Episcopalians, they were Presbyterians, they were Congregationalists, Methodist, but they were all, the 2 who were not considered Christians at
right.
the time?
We'll talk about those 2 in a moment, but they were certainly not deists, and I just want to show that before we move forward. The 2 that are claimed by many people to be deists would be Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson. Now, I would agree that both Franklin and Jefferson were not Orthodox Christians. Unless they repented before they died, I don't believe they went to heaven, but they held to a Christian understanding of much about the world, including law and government. For example, Ben Franklin, we know, was not a deist, at least at the time of the Constitutional Convention, in which they had a lot of difficulty there at the very beginning of the convention, a lot of discord and disagreement, and he rose, and he said these words on June 28, 1787. In the beginning of the contest with Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayers in this room for divine protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard. Now, he's addressing president in that case. George Washington was the president of the convention. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. A deist could never make such a claim, that God governs in the affairs of men. Nor would a deist ever say that God answered prayers, because a deist says God has nothing to do with the universe. He doesn't answer prayers. He doesn't intervene. Ben Franklin saying God did answer our prayers. He did intervene. And he goes on to say, and if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, and there he's paraphrasing scripture, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings, that's the Bible, that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Franklin's quoting Psalm 127 there. He continued, I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his, that is God's, concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. And then Franklin proceeds to call for prayer. He says, every day before we begin our sessions in this convention, we need to pray, and pray seriously. So Franklin was not a deist. Likewise, Thomas Jefferson was not a deist. If you look at his second inaugural address, this is in 1805, he said, I shall need, and it's talking about himself personally, I shall need the favor of that being in whose hands we are, who led our forefathers as Israel of old from their native land and planted them in a country flowing with all the necessaries and comforts of life, who has covered our infancy with his providence and our riper years with his wisdom and power, and to whose goodness I ask you to join with me in supplications, that is in prayers, that he will also enlighten the minds of your servants, guide their counsels, and prosper their measures, that whatsoever they do shall result in your good, and shall secure to you the peace, friendship, and approbation, that's the approval of all nations. So Jefferson's calling for prayer. He says God has answered prayers. God has providentially intervened on our behalf again and again and again. And Jefferson, there's no way that Jefferson could be a deist making that statement.
But he certainly was not, at least at that time, was not an Orthodox Christian.
Correct.
I don't think he ever accepted the deity of Jesus Christ. And this is the thing, the same it would true with Franklin. But if you look at the rest of the people, they were. I mean, because two of the people were not, you know, evangelical Christians, as we would consider them today, people try to say that, you know, this was not created as a Christian nation. There was not to be any one specific Christian sect. Certainly, it was not to be a Catholic nation. It was not to be a Protestant nation. It was to be a nation founded on Christian principles, on the principles of the Bible. But it was not to be a theocracy in any manner or means. But as James Madison said so well, our form of government was made for a moral and religious people. It would not suffice for anything else, for any other type. Why? Because you had to have people who could govern themselves according to God's law. And if you didn't have people who could govern themselves, then you were going to have an all-powerful government to provide for them and regulate them. And of course, certainly Madison, the others, were Christians, mm-hmm. although they've done everything they could to rewrite history. Why? Because there is a conspiracy against God, and it permeates every aspect of our lives, which is why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. And then, of course, now we have all of our arguments as whether or not you can have the Ten Commandments in a park. Rather than where did the United States Supreme Court get the authority to remove God from our schools? What, of course, what the Constitution says, the First Amendment, is Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So where does the Supreme Court get that authority?
Nowhere.
They created it because they hated Christianity. And this is what it's all about. When you understand that there is an organized effort to destroy the faith of our people so they can impose their tyranny, everything begins to make sense. And without that knowledge, none of it makes sense. You go ahead, David.
Well, let me just quote a few of the founders who we know were clearly Christians, or let me say this, they professed to be Christians, they believed Orthodox Christianity. God, of course, knows their hearts, and God could tell us if he wanted to whether they're in heaven or not today, but they at least professed Orthodox Christianity, George Washington being one very significant one that's under attack today. Many people try to deny him and say he was a deist or so forth. Not so. Consider his speech on May 12, 1779, to the chiefs of the Delaware Indians. He said to them, you will do well and wish to learn our ways of life and above all the religion of Jesus Christ. These will make you a greater and happier people than you are. Wow. In a letter to the 13 governors in 1783, June 8th, he wrote to them and he refers to Jesus Christ in that letter as the divine author of our blessed religion. Alexander Hamilton, who on his deathbed wrote this, I have a tender reliance on the mercy of the Almighty through the merits of the Lord Jesus Christ. John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, was also, by the way, the founder and president of the American Bible Society, an organization that distributed Bibles not all over our country, but even beyond the borders of our country. He wrote this in describing a gathering of French atheists that he had encountered while he was in Europe. They spoke freely and contemptuously of religion. I took no part in the conversation. In the course of it, one of them asked me if I believed in Christ. I answered that I did, and that I thanked God that I did. Nothing further passed between me and any of them on that subject. Or consider Patrick Henry in his last will and testament. This is what he wrote. "This is all the inheritance that I can give to my dear family. The religion of Christ can give them one which will make them rich indeed." And again, this is just a small sampling. We could look at Samuel Adams, who, as governor of Massachusetts, wrote some beautiful proclamations calling for prayer and fasting, and Roger Sherman in Connecticut. Just a whole long list of these founders who professed to be Orthodox, what we would call today evangelical Christians. It was their foundation. In fact, political scientist Lutz and Heinemann did a bit of research about the source of what the founders' quotations and paraphrases were from. In other words, they were saying, let's look at the writings of our founders. They studied 15,000 documents, speeches, letters, and so on, of our founders, and they tried to analyze what were the founders drawing upon for their thinking. And 34% of the quotations, direct quotations that the founders made in their writings were from the Bible itself. 34%. And then they go on to list the other writers that our founders were drawing upon, and that's what you mentioned earlier, that Baron Charles Montesquieu of France was perhaps the number one, I believe, in their lineup, the number one beneath the Bible of where their quotes came from. And Montesquieu was basically an interpreter and a commentator on Scripture. His major writing, The Spirit of the Laws, that was written in 1748, he contributed through that book these significant ideas to our founders. First, God is the author of all law. That is an idea that's kind of radical in our day. People think the legislature creates law. Well, not really. According to our founders, the legislators only apply the law that God gives to specific situations so that people would know, given, say you've got automobiles on a road and, there's no clear biblical command that says thou shalt drive your automobile at such and such a speed, but there's clear biblical commands relating to property rights, relating to not damaging another person's person, their body, or their property. Those sort of things can be applied, and that's what the legislature would do. It would write laws that really specify and apply what God's law says. So God is the author of all law. Secondly, man is sinful. And Montesquieu stated this in no uncertain terms. Man departs from God's law. All men, with the exception of Jesus Christ, our Savior, in some point, way, shape, or form, have departed from God's law. So God's the author of law. Man has a sin nature. He departs from God's law. Thirdly, therefore, civil government is necessary. It's necessary to keep men within the confines of God's law. Wow, that's a radical idea for most people today. When you ask them, what's the purpose of government? Most people are not going to come up with the answer, oh yeah, the purpose of civil government is to keep men within the confines of God's law. But that's what our founders believed, and that's what Montesquieu clearly expressed in his book, The Spirit of the Laws. Well, the fourth idea that Montesquieu expressed was the sinfulness of human nature causes human governments to become despotic. It's not that just individual humans are sinners, but when you get all these sinners together in a governmental structure, what inevitably happens, unless you prevent it from happening, is that government will become sinful itself. It will break out of the boundaries that God has set on human government, and the government itself will become despotic, a violator of the God-given rights of the people over which it is ruling.
Well, I certainly agree, and I think that people should understand the writings of Montesquieu. They should understand Blackstone. They should understand John Locke. One time this was taught in our schools, and even people, in grammar school and high school understood these ideas, but they've been totally censored. They've been removed from our reality. And we're going to be back in just a moment. David, pick the story up.
Well, continuing from his first three thoughts, God's the author of law, man is sinful, departs from God's law, civil government is necessary to keep man within the confines.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
Countries where if you're caught stealing, why they cut off your hand. If a woman is raped, why she is stoned to death. Why would you stone the woman rather than the man? Well, that's just the way things are. And of course, where you can have, simply a man can divorce his wife by saying three times, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you, and the woman has no rights at all. But go ahead and pick up the story there.
And so Baron Montefiore is teaching that religion makes an enormous difference as to what is considered just, good, and right. And Christianity is the most humane religion that will give the most just and humane legal system to a country. So that, yes, a woman's not burned on her husband's funeral pyre. And yes, if you steal, you're going to be punished. But your punishment will fit the crime. It will not be greater than the crime. And this is right out of the Bible. When people often misquote out of context the verse in the Old Testament that says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, what God was saying in those passages, if we study the surrounding context as well as understand the legal systems of other ancient nations, God was saying the limit to the penalty for the crime has to be no greater than the crime itself. That is, if you poke somebody's eye out on purpose, intentionally, your eye can be poked out, but nothing more than that. You're not going to chop off your arm and poke out your eye. It's only limited to the crime that you committed. And so, like, in terms of theft, the Old Testament would say restoration, that is restitution. You pay back everything you stole. You make it good, and even more so such that the person who suffered the loss for the time that they lost what you stole, that they have that restored to them as well. So restitution is what is sought, not vengeance, where you're actually penalizing the person more than what their crime actually was. So, you know, our founders understood if you're going to have a legal system that's just, a legal system that's humane, it must be based upon Christianity, upon God's law. So Montesquieu was a very significant contributor to them, and our founders. And like I said, when they did the study of the quotations of our founders, the first was the Bible, 34%. The next often quoted, I believe, is Montesquieu. And then the third most often quoted was Sir William Blackstone. And again, Blackstone is interpreting biblical law and showing how it applies in life. He was a member of the Anglican Church, the Church of England of that day, and his most famous work and most read work here in our country by our founders was the Commentaries on the Laws of England. Basically, he's given a commentary on the common law, which was a development from biblical truth as back into ancient English history, even before the Magna Carta. The king was seeking to steer and develop the legal system of the land based upon God's law, and that's why the English common law, even in contrast with the other legal systems throughout Europe, the English common law was most closely aligned with the Bible in terms of its basis for what is considered right and just. Well, there were several main thoughts that Blackstone contributed to our founders, and first of all, of course, is a far better understanding of English common law, which was very helpful to them. They were in a new set of circumstances and without a whole lot of structure to guide them as they started a brand new country. And it was interesting to see that in terms of publishing, Blackstone was far more successful here in our country than he was in England. Far more copies of his commentaries on the laws of England sold here in America than actually sold back there in England. And for at least about 150 years from the founding of our country onward, Blackstone was the unquestioned authority in the courtroom. If an attorney could quote Blackstone and show how it related to his case, some point that Blackstone was making, he would win the case just about hands down every time, because everyone who studied law studied William Blackstone and read the commentaries on the laws of England. That was essential legal training.
But I think what's so important for our people to understand is that those people who hated Blackstone because, of course, he based his philosophy on the Bible. And there really are those who hate the Bible. And that is why, of course, Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England are no longer the laws here in the United States. Certainly, people in law school aren't even allowed to read the Constitution when they go to law school. All they can read is what corrupt judges have said that the law said. Understand that there really is an organized effort to destroy the Christian foundation of our nation as we move step by step away from a society where men were free, towards a society where everything will be regulated from the cradle to the grave. And, of course, the all-powerful state, and, of course, what we're going to be seeing in the coming months will be the installation of an authoritarian state in the name, of course, of helping us out of this terrible financial quandary we're in, or fighting the terrorists, or you have to have an excuse, don't you? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Pastor David Whitney. Go right ahead, David.
Well, Blackstone's contribution not only gave him a better understanding of English common law, but an understanding of what is law. I mean, that's one of those essential questions that actually when you ask people today, what is law, many people kind of scratch their head and they don't have a good answer, including those legislators. And I've talked to a number of legislators here in Maryland that, you know, when you ask them what is law, they really can't answer with a very clear understanding at all. They're confused, even though they're the ones who are charged with making laws all the time. And but Blackstone taught that there's three categories of law. And you'll see the first two of these categories are clearly reflected in the statement in our Declaration of Independence. The phrase, the laws of nature and nature's God. And again, this is why we're doing all this background understanding and looking at the roots of what our founders' thinking was, because to understand what they meant by what they said, we've got to understand what they were thinking, who they were reading, what was influencing their thoughts. So Blackstone said the first category of law is revealed law. Quoting Blackstone now, he said, the doctrines thus delivered we call the revealed or divine law, and they are to be found only in the Holy Scriptures. So the Bible is revealed law. The second category of law he called the law of nature. And let me quote Blackstone again. When he created man, that is when God created man, and endued him with free will to conduct himself in all parts of life, he laid down certain immutable laws of human nature, whereby that free will is in some degree regulated and restrained, and gave him also the faculty of reason to discover the purpose of those laws. So in the law of nature, Blackstone's talking about human reason, human conscience, where God writes his law upon the hearts of all human beings. And there's a good bit of disagreement today. Many people say, well, no, all human beings don't hold to God's law written on their hearts. No, that's not true. Particularly anthropologists would claim that this is the case. Oh, you know, these Aborigines over here, they don't have anything that looks like Christian legal principles in their minds and so on. But I would challenge someone who believes that to take out a globe and just spin that globe and put your finger down anywhere on solid land, somewhere where there's actual physical land, and we'll put a parachute on your back and put you in a little plane and fly you to that exact spot on the globe, wherever it is randomly you happen to land. We'll dump you out of that and give you these instructions. The moment you land and...
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment here with Pastor David Whitney. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney, and we're going to pick up his story in just a moment. But before we do, David, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution. Give them your website and tell them what they'll get and what they'll receive if they do get one of your kits.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Yes, our host kit is what we call is a way in which you can communicate just some of the truths that we're sharing here on the radio program. Communicate them with your own family and friends and perhaps with your church or the larger community around. And this is an essential way that every single American citizen can do something about stopping the tyrants who are currently in power. Many people feel like, oh, it's hopeless and I can't do anything. Well, that's not true. Satan would have you believe that you're helpless and it's hopeless. It is not. If millions of Americans wake up to the truth of what our founders actually structured and demand that the elected officials either get out of the way or abide by the supreme law of the land, the U.S. Constitution. But, of course, until Americans know the Constitution, they can't hold their elected officials accountable to that standard. So it takes millions of Americans learning this. And so our host kit designed for anyone with any group of people to take them through 12 lectures by constitutional professor John Eidsmo, 2 lectures by David Barton. The host kit contains everything you need to conduct a class with answers to all the test questions, so you as the host really have everything you need. And they can purchase that either by going online if they go to our web store. Our website at Institute on the Constitution is simply iotconline.com. That's all one word, iotconline.com. And immediately as you go to the top of that front page, you'll see store and click to the store, And there you can get the host kit, as well as there's many other materials available, radio program series, DVDs of First Friday lectures, all sorts of materials that can help you learn about and see how the issues that you learn, how that applies to today's issues regarding how the Constitution is being mistreated and trampled upon. Also, if people prefer to purchase our host kit or any of our materials by phone rather than purchasing it online, they can call us toll-free at Institute on the Constitution. And that toll-free number for Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. Again, that toll-free number for Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. And Dr. Stan, we're encouraged as I talk to people throughout the country who are conducting classes. I've talked to some people this week that are getting host kits and planning for the new year to start a class in their community. And we know that what it will take is millions of Americans understanding these principles and then taking action and applying it to their particular elected officials.
And I think it's really significant that these classes have been or are being held in every state of the union. Now, you're not going to hear about this on ABC, CBS, and NBC. The last thing they want to do is call your attention to the Constitution and how it is being abridged by our political leaders, both of the Republican and the Democrat parties, and the fact that these people who serve there in Congress, most of them are lawbreakers, they've sworn to uphold the Constitution, and they're consistently violating it. There's no right in the Constitution to bail out, certainly, our automotive industry. There's no right to give, you know, literally hundreds of millions of dollars to Citicorp or to AIG or all these things. All of these things that they're doing now are wrong. In fact, the whole monetary system is a violation of our Constitution because the monetary affairs were to be handled by our Congress and we were to have currency that was backed by gold and silver, so you didn't have to worry about corrupt politicians and financiers inflating the money supply, creating money out of nothing, as bankers do, and then, of course, using that money to buy up the media and to buy up the corporations and to buy up the politicians and to establish a new ruling elite in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. David, before I interrupted, you were telling us this idea that the laws of God are written in the hearts of mankind, and that even in the darkest of civilizations, we're very seldom they've ever seen a white man, or they may never have seen a white man. Why, of course, if you go there and you were to steal something from a native, he would know that that was wrong.
Yes.
Because basically, it is wrong to steal, it's wrong to kill. And people know inherently that these things are wrong, but you go ahead and pick up the story.
Yeah, so the idea of we dumped you out of the plane with a parachute, as soon as you land, if you took your parachute off, and the very first human being you met, you didn't say a word to them, but you took something they were holding in their hand. Whatever it was, you grabbed what they had in their hand and you ran as fast as you could. What would that human being do? It didn't matter what language he spoke, what culture, where he was born. Nothing mattered. He knows it is wrong to steal, and he's going to come running after you because you have violated his God-given right to own property. He knows that. Well, my 2-year-old knows that too, you know, when she's fighting with her sisters. And some of the first words out of her mouth when they're fighting over toys is, "It's mine. I know it's mine. It belongs to me." Even a 2-year-old understands God's law. Why? Scripture tells us in Romans chapter 2 and verse 15 that God has written his law on the hearts of all human beings. Now, of course, people have perverted their conscience and people have deadened that law written on their hearts, so not everybody is fully aware of it, but they were at one time in their life, and if they even thought very closely about it, they certainly could be aware of it again. Well, that's the law of nature that Blackstone categorized as the second form of law. So the first and second are clearly spoken of in our Declaration of Independence. They're put in a reverse order from Blackstone, where Jefferson wrote, "The laws of nature and of nature's God," which you could expand that phrase to mean the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. Well, that first phrase, the laws of nature, is clearly what Blackstone calls the law of nature. The second one, the laws of nature's God, is what Blackstone called revealed law. They're talking about the exact same two categories as the foundation of our country that Blackstone said were the first two categories of law. Now, it's interesting, the third category of law that Blackstone spoke about, he called municipal law, that which is adopted by civil government. And Blackstone said, it must conform to the higher law of God. Let me quote Blackstone here. Upon these two foundations, that is, revealed law and the law of nature, upon these two foundations depend all human laws. That is to say, no human law should be suffered to contradict these. So if somebody says they're going to put a law out that permits the murder of another human being, like abortion, well, that's no law at all. It should not be suffered to exist in a civilized country, in a Christian country. Or somebody says that, you know, stealing is fine, which is basically what the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 said, that these international banksters could steal all the wealth of Americans and get away with it. Well, that law is absolutely wrong. It is a violation of the revealed law of God. It's a violation of the law of nature. And so Blackstone basically made it very clear that any human legislation, what he called municipal law, has to be judged as to whether it is valid, whether it is truly legal, or even if you could call it truly law, it has to be evaluated on these other two. Revealed law, which is God's Word, the Bible, and the law of nature, which is human conscience informed by human reason. And so Blackstone was huge in his influence on our founders, and our founders believed these things to be true. No, and, you know, we could quote a number of our founders that said similar things, that no law which violates God's law is any law at all. That's very clearly what our founders believed as a whole. Then the third major contribution to our founders' thinking by Blackstone was that judicial restraint is to be advanced, that judges do not make law. Judges must not make law. They are only expounding law and applying law in particular cases. And that's an idea that's been certainly lost in our country today, as even many pro-life people say, well, you know, we've got to overturn Roe v. Wade because Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. Wait a minute. Roe v. Wade is an opinion issued by judges regarding one case and one case alone. That is Roe and Wade. It applies to no one else. Legally speaking, it is only applied to that. And yet, all the legal scholars say, oh, no, no, it's the law of the land. They use that phrase. And the propaganda has been sickly applied, and most people swallow the lie that judges make law. They do not make law at all. And of course, in any opinion they issue that's in violation of God's law is null and void, and they should be punished for having issued such a erroneous opinion, punished by being impeached, removed from office, and perhaps even their retirement removed from them so that they suffer, and other judges would wake up and say, wait a minute, I better not violate God's law as a judge. So this is very important, and our founders clearly understood it. Judges are not free to do whatever they choose and please, and they certainly do not make law. And that's the reason today we're in such a mess, that judges have been permitted by the other two branches of government. Some would even say it was in collusion with the other two branches of government, that judges have been given this enormous power to change our entire structure, to twist the Constitution into something absolutely unrecognizable. You know, so you read, I've got a bunch of books in my own library that talk about judicial tyranny, black robe judges, and you know, Men in Black. There's a whole list of books that deal with the imperial judiciary and so on, all of them crying out the same thing, that judges are foul, the judges have violated the law, and they're absolutely right. But it's not the judges alone that are at fault. It's the other two branches of government who, either by collusion or neglect, have allowed the judges to actually change our form of government when they have no legal power to do so. And the fact that they've tried to change our form of government should have been long ago grounds for impeaching them. And I can think of so many different cases where the judges should have been impeached. Roe v. Wade is just one of a long list.
Well, you know, the most distressing thing ever is that the Republicans held the presidency and they controlled two houses of Congress, both the Senate and the House of Representatives, for 6 years. And at any time they could have passed legislation, because they had a majority, the reverse Roe versus Wade, and simply put on a stipulation that the Supreme Court the courts cannot intervene in this decision, and that is allowed by the Constitution.
Yeah.
And George Bush, pretending, of course, very cleverly, very subtly, that he was pro-life, never led that, and certainly the leaders of neither House nor the Senate tried to do it. People have to understand it's all smoke and mirrors. You have this idea, one party is pro-life, one party is pro-choice. That is part of the simply this whole concept of the two-party system, the myth of the two-party system, whereas the reality is both political parties are controlled, in essence, by the same people, and very, very seldom is there a bit of difference between them. They play the game, one party pro-immigrant, one party pro-amnesty, one party pro-homosexual, one party pro-traditional values, and it's all for the benefit of the public. So that they really think that we have a choice when we go to the polls. What we need to do is take our government back. We have a wonderful form of government. The Constitution is the law of our land. Isn't it a shame that neither the president nor the leaders of the politicians in Washington, D.C. really believe in the Constitution that they've sworn to uphold?
Well, the third and most influential writer that shaped the thinking of our founders was John Locke, and actually he preceded Blackstone by a few years. He died in 1704, and Blackstone was born in 1723. But John Locke had very significant influence in his writings on our founders. Perhaps the most read of his writing by our founders was the Second Treaty on Civil Government. The First Treaty is very important as well. And basically, John Locke is an expositor of Christian principles from the Word of God. And, for example, one of his writings that he did later in life was an essay concerning human understanding of St. Paul's epistles by consulting St. Paul himself. So he's writing a commentary on the epistles of St. Paul. And when we look at Locke, although there's some areas where I would say he wasn't completely orthodox, in general he had a good understanding of the principles in God's Word about law and government. For example, he said that government, human civil government, is established by covenant or by contract of the people, and it's ultimately, all of those contracts are based upon that paction, that is, that covenant, which God made with Noah after the deluge, which was the first time that God ordained human civil government, as Noah and his sons exited from the ark. So God ordained human government, and God who has ordained the laws of nature, so he's using the same phrase as Blackstone later used, the laws of nature, to which all human law must be subordinate. And of course, this law of nature includes our God-given natural rights, the natural right to life and to liberty and to property. And if that sounds familiar, it should. You know, we have an unalienable right, a God-given unalienable right, the Declaration says, to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That phrase, pursuit of happiness, by the way, means economic freedom to own property, to keep the fruits of your labor, to be able to save and to be able to pass on your wealth to your children and so on. All of those things are included in that phrase, the pursuit of happiness.
Well, I think it's important people to know that when Jefferson actually initially wrote the Declaration of Independence, he did include life, liberty, and property, because those were the three things that were talked about by Locke. And somebody suggested pursuit of happiness, and of course the majority went along, and so that's how the term pursuit of happiness got into the Declaration. But if you read the Constitution, you will never find the use of the words life and liberty together without the word property, and you'll find it in two separate places in the body of the Constitution, really echoing the concepts of John Locke, basically the right to life, liberty, and property, which are the very foundations of freedom. These ideas, of course, which have been progressively eroded as we have local planning commissions and local boards, you know, everything to regulate your property, and yet the right, very right to do with your property as you wish is a vital part of freedom. But you see, we are moving towards a society where the bureaucracy will tell you what to do and with everything that you're doing and regulate you from the cradle to the grave. And that is what authoritarianism, what fascism, what Nazism, what communism is all about. This is the ultimate goal of socialism. And a lot of people don't mind giving up their freedom for all the benefits. But eventually they're going to find out that any person who gives up any bit of his freedom for luxury and for security will eventually lose all freedom. And I fear that's exactly where we're headed today. Go ahead, David.
Yes, well, John Locke said that we have these God-given natural rights, and they are the basis of all that just human government must be about protecting. And it's by consent of the governed. That is, we have a contract with our government that we the people form, and the government must abide by its part of the contract, which is exactly what's not happening today. They're violating their side of the contract, and that is the U.S. Constitution is not being followed, not being obeyed, and they are lawbreakers that need to be stopped.
Well, we're facing very, very difficult times, ladies and gentlemen. But we need to understand the Constitution, and you out there have an obligation to get a kit to begin teaching this. As the word spreads, it's amazing how exciting it is to understand our Constitution and the very foundations of our freedom. Well, David, you have 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Thank you, Dr. Stanwell. In addition to those three chief thinkers who contributed to our founder's thoughts,
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt, that nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
That's one of the problems on the radio, because the computer is going to come on and tell us when to go to the break, whether we like it or not. Well, this is the time I need to remind all of our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that if you're in a position to help, you will. I know many of our supporters are having real economic problems at the present time, and certainly many of the ministries are having problems, and we understand that. If you're in a position to help, we'd love to hear from you. Perhaps you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, where you get our four best tapes of the month and our monthly newsletter. You can subscribe to our newsletter. Or if you simply like to get a catalog or perhaps a list of the foods that you really should think about being laid in, the freeze-dried, dehydrated, long-term food storage packed in nitrogen, which we work with Ready Reserve Foods and they provide, you can give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, if you'd like. The catalog on Ready Reserve Food, if you'd like to have information about the Berkey water filters, if you'd like to have information on the sort of health products you should have on hand, why, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we want to talk about a few books that will help you to understand what's going on. We have the compilation of the Freedom Documents compiled by Chuck Baldwin, who ran for the presidency on the Constitution Party ticket. And the Freedom Documents consist of 50 documents that, you know, they're the foundational documents of our country, the Mayflower Compact, George Washington's speeches, Abraham Lincoln's speeches, certainly the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. But all of the various documents, there are 50 of them, that is so vitally important to understand America. And it's called the Freedom Documents. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. John Stormer's book, Betrayed by the Bench, is certainly one of the best analyses of what the Supreme Court has done. And then if you want to understand why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools, everybody knows they did it, but why did they take it out? What motivated the men who set out to destroy the Christian foundation of this country, the godly foundation of our country? You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because we'll tell you not only what the Supreme Court did, but why they did it, what motivated them. And then, of course, I hope that you'll want to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret. It's on DVD, and there's a syllabus that goes with that. But you have to understand there is a secret. It's been around for 5,000 years or more. And, of course, it's been known to all of the great philosophers and leaders in the past, but never revealed to the common people until now. Rhonda Burns is featured on Oprah Winfrey, has written a book all about it. It's about the secret. And she's put out a DVD, sold millions and millions and millions of copies. But we explain to you what the secret really is and the danger, the stark danger of the secret. And do not, under any circumstances, be taken in by those who would lead you away from your belief in the Lord of the Bible to eternal damnation. So that is, again, the Forbidden Secret. The complement of that is a talk called Secret Knowledge. And then, of course, the syllabus. We also hope many of you will want to get the book Betrayed by the Bench by John Stormer, the Freedom Documents. They're all available from Radio Liberty. And then, of course, we also carry William Federer's excellent book, America's God and Government. And, of course, it goes into the background of the Christian beliefs of the founders of this nation. So you can discuss this intelligently with the people who have been brainwashed in the public schools. How are they brainwashed? Because the foundations took over our educational system. And you want to know what they're up to? The Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie Foundations. We carry the book, we've kept it in print for many years, called Foundations, Their Power and Influence, one of the five most important books in my library. So remember again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is you the king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Melody Cederstrom, and we're going to be talking about the greatest financial crisis this country has seen since 1931, in fact, probably the greatest financial crisis we've had in the last 300 years, because you're seeing the whole economic structure of the United States and the world grind to a halt. And it's certainly not just here in the United States that they're having problems. I mean, Europe has entered into a recession. Germany has entered into a recession. India and China have entered into a recession. The banks are not lending anywhere in the world, and as a result, why the economy has just literally collapsed in many countries. Certainly, shipping has collapsed. Right? The freight, you know, is we've lost something like 92% of the freight, you know, between the United States and China just isn't there. The Chinese will not provide goods unless they're paid for. American companies are not going to send money to China because their factories are closing down. 100,000 Chinese factories will be closed down before this year ends, and so they send their money over for the goods, and it may very well be that the owner of the factory will just skip out with the money. In the past, of course, they've always had letters of credit that would come from a financial institution, and the Chinese merchants could be sure that that money would be paid by the American banks once they sent the goods. But now they don't trust the American banks because so many American banks are really having real problems. In fact, it's been analyzed that people have looked at our banks. Almost every one of them is insolvent. Why? Because they bought faulty loans, they made investments that they shouldn't have. The mortgage crisis is dragging down the value of the holdings of our banks, and most of our banks are insolvent, but they can't let the American people know that. Well, with that as the background, Melody Cederstrom is our guest this evening from Discount Gold and Silver. Hi, Melody. How's she going back there in Pennsylvania?
Oh, it's a cold one, Dr. Stan, but we're surviving. Thank you for asking.
Well, it's even a little chilly out here in California, so not cold, but at least a little bit chilly. Well, tell us now, Sydney, you had a wild week here as far as gold and silver was concerned, with the skyrocketing price of gold and silver Friday and again on the first of the week. What sort of response did you get from your customers?
Had a lot of inquiries as far as, wish I, didn't wait. The surprise moves in gold to the degree we had two major days, one with gold being up over $50 in one day. But we've been telling clients for a very long time, you're going to see these large moves in gold and silver, particularly gold. And it'll be commonplace for gold to be moving $50 to $100 in a day. We're going to see some wide swings in the gold prices as it continues to move upward.
Well, this was a very, very remarkable move. I don't think anybody anticipated anything quite that dramatic. And then, of course, the question is, why did the gold go up? Do we have any idea why it went up? Why the silver went up so strongly? It was up $1, $1.50 there in a couple of days. What happened?
I don't think the question is why gold was up or silver was up. The questions we always need to ask is, why is it down? Because certainly we know that gold and silver is suppressed to keep it from rising, as it is a regulator as far as in the old canary in the mines. And it is a currency. It is. It has no boundaries. It has no liability.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Melody. Well, Melody, go right ahead with what you were saying.
So it isn't to the fact that gold shouldn't be trading higher. It should. It's in the manner that it is being suppressed. But we did see a fall in the U.S. dollar in the currency basket in the index. We reached a little over 88 points, and currently we're looking at the U.S. dollar trading in the basket of currencies at about 85. So we had a little bit of a pullback there, and again, gold reflected that move in the downward swing in the U.S. dollar. But gold should be trading significantly higher. We believe it will trade significantly higher, but I look at it as each day that they give us at these lower prices, we are blessed because it allows people to preserve their wealth, and they do need to buy the insurance policy that gold provides to preserve people's preserve wealth.
Well, you know, I think it really, the average individual cannot believe what Jimmy Rogers is saying. Jimmy Rogers, of course, is a very, very famous investor. He certainly made billions of dollars investing in commodities and other items. He even wrote a book about traveling around the world on a motorcycle, evaluating it at various markets. But Jimmy Rogers says that the dollar is doomed. Get out of it. He's taken his money and put it into Japanese yen and Swiss francs and into commodities. Because he believes you have to be in something tangible when you have a fiat money system. Do you think the average individual really understands what a fiat money system is and what always happens to fiat money system always has down throughout history?
Absolutely not. I don't think they have any idea what is truly the motivation behind the dollar falling and the problems that we face. And it all comes back to our currency and having a sound currency backed by something that is real, like gold. And they don't know. They don't know what's going on. And I do believe many of them just feel this situation is going to play it out. It'll have to play itself out. And I truly believe they don't feel they have any, they have the ability to change anything. And for the most part, I think people feel a disconnect from what is truly happening.
Well, I think that, of course, the downturn in the economy has hurt many people very badly. But an awful lot of people still have their jobs. They still have their homes. They may have seen their stock investments fall, but they honestly believe what the talking heads on television say, and that is just hang in there. They're going to come back again. But they never tell you when they're going to come back, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom. And if you're out there in the listening audience and have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. What people do not understand is that our leaders, you know, rather than, of course, allow the economy to contract and get back to a sound currency, which is gold or silver backed, they're just going to keep creating new money to try to keep the house of cards from tumbling. It had taken almost 200 years to create $1 trillion in debt. That was 1980 when we had $1 trillion in debt. In the next 8 years under Ronald Reagan, we accumulated another $1.7 trillion. So when Ronald Reagan left office, we had $2.7 trillion of debt in the United States. And then in the succeeding years, by the time George Bush got to office, we had a national debt of $5.6 trillion. It rose to about $10 trillion until recently. And then in the last 6 weeks, the national debt increased $500 billion. That's almost $500 billion just in about 6 or 8 weeks. People do not understand that we're going to accumulate a debt somewhere between $1.5 and $2 trillion in this coming year and during the next coming financial year. People do not understand that what this is going to do is destroy the value of our currency, and that's why at least some people are turning to gold and silver. But the average individual doesn't understand. They think if we just throw enough money, we're going to get the whole monetary system working again. But you're not going to be able to get it working again, though you may be able to get it working a little bit. But banks are afraid to loan because, of course, they're trying to maintain their solvency. They don't want want to end up like City Corporation. And we've already given them $20 billion. We gave them $25 billion just about a month ago. Now we've given them another $20 billion. And we've guaranteed over $300 billion of their debt, which most of it is probably not good. And that's all going to come out of the American taxpayers. And the idea we're going to get the money back is simply a lie to keep the people from understanding that they're destroying the economic future of generations unborn. Well, Melody, certainly as you're talking to people, as you're analyzing what's going on, certainly these are certainly the most dangerous times I've ever seen. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree. And today again, when the Fed came out and divvied up another $800 billion for consumers out there to try to jumpstart this economy for mortgages and for consumer debt. I mean, it's just, they just continue, and it's just mind-boggling to the degree that it's like it is just, I've been saying it all day, it's just complete insanity what is coming out of Washington and what's coming out of the Federal Reserve and the amount of money that's being printed. And, I mean, this is all just money created. And it is just so dangerous, and we're on a path, and they're just going to continue to do it until it has complete collapse. You find more and more people and economists around the world that are acknowledging and been saying for a very long time that this country will be bankrupt and it will collapse. Because there is nothing that backs the dollar, that we do have a worthless currency, and there is nothing that backs any of our debt. So it seems everyone knows, and even a lot of the American people out there, they know. Perhaps they can't put their finger on it, but they do know that something is wrong. So it is amazing. It is dangerous. It will affect each and every one of us.
And I think what people don't understand is, well, what's going on over in Iceland now? Iceland, of course, their currency has simply become worthless. The banks have closed down. Now they've opened back up again. But, of course, there's nothing to buy on this in the stores. Why is there nothing to buy in the stores? Well, because the store buyers can't buy things from other countries. They don't produce much there in Iceland, you know, other than sheep and fish. And so they have to buy everything from other countries. And up until recently, they had a very high standard of living, one of the highest in the country. And then, of course, their bankers and their government got on this, well, we're just going to borrow and spend our way into prosperity. And they began borrowing massive amounts of money from elsewhere in the world and paying 15%, 12 or 15% interest on the money, and of course people from all over the world were putting their money into the Icelandic banks, and the carry trade was taking money from Japan and investing it in Iceland. But they didn't do anything productive with the money. They were just living better and better and better. And then all of a sudden, why, of course, the carry trade people who'd borrowed money from Japan and lent it to Iceland, they said the Japanese currency was increasing in value. They had to sell their Icelandic bonds and repatriate the money. And then, of course, as the whole world economy began to collapse, why, the Icelandic banks really could not keep up with their payments and withdrawals. And they had to suddenly say, you can't take your money out of our banks. And you know, literally 400,000 people from England and Ireland and Scotland had their money on deposit over there, and they couldn't get the money out of the banks. And then, of course, nobody would trust Icelandic money, and so the people who owned stores over there couldn't buy anything on the open, on the world markets, because nobody would sell to them because their money was worthless. And, of course, the people over there beginning to riot and to burn buildings down. And this is just a microcosm. It's going to happen in countries all across the world. In fact, I think that the people who are running our country fear that. That's why, of course, they brought a brigade home from Iraq and training these people, a military brigade, in population control, because they're expecting civil unrest to develop in our country because of the economic policies, the irresponsible economic policies of the people who created the current problem. And, of course, a lot of the problem can be traced directly back to the Clinton administration. Certainly a lot of it has to rest on the head of George Bush, but a lot of this started during the Clinton administration. And where's Barack Obama going to get his advisors? Why, of course, he's going to take a man who worked for George Bush, gentleman now who's going to become the new Secretary of the Treasury. And then, of course, they're going to go back to the Clinton administration and get all of their people and bring them into the Obama administration. And the more things change, the more they remain the same. Melody, how can we get the American people to understand that nothing has really changed?
I think they will find out come spring. I think they've put a lot of hope in this person, in this new president, and into this new administration. And I believe even by spring they will find out that he is unable to change anything, and that anything that he does do will just continue to accelerate the problem that we have. All the plans that he has is again just creating more money. You know, it's great. The infrastructure of this country should have been built a long time ago. We don't have the money to do it. It has to come from somewhere. And so all his plans, all his ideas, all his tax cuts and making the wealthy pay for this, when you really consider $250,000 a year for a family of four, it's difficult for them to get by. I mean, sure, it's a lot more than someone making $50,000 or $75,000. Of course it is, but they pay quite a bit of the taxes as it is. And so I think it's just a lot of dog and pony show, and I don't think any of his programs that he has and that he wants to bring will help anything, and it certainly won't even sustain it for a short period of time. And come spring, people will realize that this whole election and everything that they voted for, they placed their hope in the wrong place.
Well, I think it's very interesting that Robert Gates, of course, who is George Bush's Secretary of Defense, has agreed to stay on. Why would they want to keep Robert Gates there? He's an old-line CIA operative who, of course, you know, is going right along with the wars over there in the Middle East. And why would they want to keep him there? Why is a Barack Obama, you know, saying that we've got to put more troops into Afghanistan? I thought he was going to bring our troops home. And unless we, of course, get out of the Middle East and pull our troops home, why are we going to continue bleeding our finances over there? And then Barack Obama talks about a health care plan. Where's the money going to come for that health care plan? He talks about, you know, putting 2.5 million Americans to work, you know, as we begin to rebuild the infrastructure of our society. Where is the money coming from? And we've already got over 10 million people employed. What's going to happen to the other 7.5 million people that are going to be unemployed under Barack Obama's program? And, of course, everything that they're talking about is going to require that we borrow more money. Who are we going to borrow the money from? We're having to actually put out between $2 and $3 billion every day. We're the biggest creditor nation, creditor nation in the world. We owe more money than anybody else. Other countries own about $4 trillion worth of our bonds and corporate bonds, federal T-bills, and of course stock in our corporations. $4 trillion more than we owe of them. And America cannot continue borrowing indefinitely. One of these days, the countries throughout the world are going to say, we're not going to give you any more money. And what happens when that happens, Melody?
It implodes and we collapse. And, a lot of the funds that's being produced now, you know, you hear about $320 billion, $300 billion, $800 billion. Those funds really haven't been funneled into the system yet. And we'll see the interest on those loans will be coming due, and that $2 to $3 billion a day that we need will be increased substantially. And so I suspect big changes and substantial declines in the markets and prices of gold to change drastically in the first quarter of the year.
Well, I think we're living in exciting times. If you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 464-8295. The figures are that we've already committed something like $7 trillion to this bailout. Remember that the gross domestic product is only about $12, $13 trillion a year, and most of that is services. And we've already committed that amount of money, but we can't tell the American people we're spending money we don't have. Go right ahead, Melody.
So you're absolutely right. We're at about the...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Over there, but you're not hearing about that. The fact that there was this last weekend, there were demonstrations in 39 cities, mass demonstrations of concerned Americans, saying we've got to close down the Federal Reserve System and get back to a viable currency. And although apparently there was a report on CNN and reports up there on the Internet. The regular ABC, CBS, and NBC refuse to cover that. The last thing they want for people to understand is the Federal Reserve System is a privately owned bank created by the bankers to enrich the bankers, and has done a great job. But then behind these it's the powerful spirits of forces that really control the bankers, control the world. Well, let's go to Ray calling, and if you're out there, you have a question or comment, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Ray, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I'd just like to say to you and Melody, I'm optimistic, although I'd like to add that I think one of the first things that happened with this whole snowball effect with the economy was that people had bad credit. I mean, they were living on credit for so long, for so many years. People have lived on credit, and then the Bush administration punishes all, you know, those of us that are, you know, like myself. I went bankrupt in 1998, but they changed the laws, and people couldn't declare their credit card debt for bankruptcy, and so that had a big effect, I think. That had a big effect, and also Bush's spending on the war and the tax cuts for the wealthy, the top 10%, I think that had a big effect on the whole thing. And I don't know if I'm right. Maybe I'm partially right. But I'd like to know what you think.
Now, Melody, what do you think?
What I said.
Well, he's absolutely right. The consumer out there did had their spending spree on credit. It was all debt. We're a debt. Two-thirds of our economy is based on consumer spending, and that spending has all been debt. It's backed by debt. And, yes, they did change the bankruptcy laws, and, yes, it was the Bush administration, but it also is because, you know, this government anymore, this country is run anymore by corporations, and they were only out to protect themselves. So you have all these law changes, and anything that they do is certainly for the benefit of them. And certainly you've had the tax cuts and so forth, and I think these were just things in order to put Band-Aids on a system that is bad. We have a bad system. It has started a long time ago. It truly started, you know, way before, a little bit even before the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve came along, and everything that has transpired since then is cause and effect, and eventually by taking us off the gold standard, there's no honest weights and measures. There's corruption in the government. When they took us off the gold standard, there's no more regulation, or there's no responsibility tied to what they spend. So things just spiral out of control.
And I think you're absolutely right. Go ahead, Ray. Have something else to say?
Yeah, you know, President Nixon took us off the gold standard, right, in 71 or 72, somewhere around.
August 15, 1971.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, you know, Nixon was pretty much controlled by Henry Kissinger and the rest of the
He was controlled by the one world government.
Yeah,
crowd,
by the one world
cabal,
government.
Cabal, as you call it. Which color was your will, but
cabal.
These people, of course, control both political parties. Of course, they work through the Council on Foreign Relations, the Club of Rome, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission, now the Group of 30. And, of course, these people run the world financially. They control the wealth. But what people have always missed is the powerful spirits of forces that energize this movement. But go ahead, Ray.
One more thing. You know, it was interesting to me. I was reading the paper today in the Sentinel, and it mentioned what Obama didn't say. He didn't say that he was going to rescind the tax cuts for the top 10%, so I'm wondering, is he going to let them expire, or is he going to just not do anything at all about
that? He's surrounded himself with very wealthy people. Do you think that they financed and backed him and put him into the presidency so he would raise their taxes and make them pay more money? Do you honestly think that, Ray?
No.
Why would people of great wealth back Barack Obama if he was going to take away their money?
You're right.
This is simply what you tell the people. You never tell the people
that's
the truth.
That's not what to tell
you.
I'll
be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and do you have any thoughts on what Ray was saying there, Melody?
Well, you know, you're exactly right. They're not going to take away the money from the wealthy, and they'll take it away from the middle class. And, you know, just like with the dot-com bubble that burst earlier back in 2000, it's the same thing. You know, people had big accounts. They had big investment accounts. And, you know, people can't believe that they're really going to walk away with that money. Wall Street will not allow them. The wealthy will not allow funds to be given away to the people. We've had the baby boomers that are retiring this year, that began to retire this year. And certainly they're not going to allow them to walk away with all their pension funds. They had to let the bubble out. And everything is happening for their reasons, and you're right. They're absolutely in control. It's been their agenda, and this is where we're at.
I want to make one more comment. It's just an afterthought. I think that I really do believe now that they put Obama in because they want to avoid a backlash, a racial backlash, because they fear the people rising up, I think. I think they still fear that, in a way. And I think they let him become president. Well, you know, he was chosen to be president, I think, from the very beginning, but they made it look like, and somehow they put Sarah Palin in there, who was really incompetent, in my view. Why they put her in as McCain's running mate is a mystery to me.
I don't know. I think they did that to get the pro-life Christian vote.
Well, yeah, but...
I think it would have even been worse for McCain if it hadn't been for Sarah Palin, because some of our Christian leaders agreed to vote for John McCain because Sarah Palin was on the ticket, and she would have had no influence had John McCain won. It was all show dressing. It was all frosting on the cake.
Right, yeah. Okay, well, that's all. Okay. Thanks very much.
All right. Well, of course, that was Ray calling in. Of course, our guest this evening is Melody Cederstrom from Discount Gold and Silver, and we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes, and Melody's going to tell us how to get in touch with her and her, what she does, and the sort of advice and recommendations that she would give you in reference to what you should do now, because believe me, ladies and gentlemen, most people are going to lose almost all of their material possessions before this whole catastrophe is over with. This has happened in other civilizations, you know, in centuries past. It's unfolding in America today. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Melody Cederstrom. Melody, would you like to get your web page out, your telephone number, and then, of course, any thoughts you have for our listeners?
Our phone number is 1-800-375-4188. That is 1-800-375-4188. And if you'd like to visit our website, it is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. discountgoldandsilvertrading.net, and our email address is very similar as discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, and we'd be more than happy to respond to your emails or just call us. And I think as this unfolds, as this of the collapse of this country and our financial system, it is a collapse, becomes closer, I believe people need to increase their holdings of gold and silver. I have yet to found any investment that will preserve their wealth like gold and silver. Is it the all true answer to everything? I don't know, but yet until I find something else, I believe it is. I do recommend that you hold 80% gold, 20% silver, and we try to do something a little bit different than everybody. We make our recommendations based on the suitability of each customer. We don't push one type of product to everyone because perhaps that's not suitable for them. So we try to take a little bit of our customers' investment objectives of their own, and we build portfolios around that along what I have seen in the years that I've been in this business that would best suit their needs. We've done a very good job. A lot of our customers, the majority of them, except perhaps when gold was 1,000 over 1,000. They're all in. They're all making profit on their investments. And day in and day out, I hear about people who've purchased coins 3, 4, 10 years ago, and they're barely breaking even. So it's very important. It does make a difference what you hold in your portfolio. So I don't advise trading, but sometimes you can, what I call tweaking your portfolio, that can give you a little bit better investment advantage in the gold and silver area.
All right, fine. Sydney, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And, you know, pretty of it was so interesting, the way that Barack Obama kept talking about taxing the rich. Well, that is the oldest trick in the world. It's called applying class warfare. And time and again, over the last 50, 60 years, I've been listening to what the politicians have said. They're always talking about, you know, that there's some multimillionaires that don't pay any taxes. We've got to have a new set of laws there so that those multimillionaires don't, are going to pay their fair share of taxes. So they pass all new laws, and then instead of having 100 millionaires that don't pay any taxes, now they got 500 millionaires that don't pay any taxes, but our tax bill goes up. And then they come up with this same line again. Oh, my goodness, think of those wealthy people who aren't paying their fair share of taxes, and we're going to pass new laws, and they pass new laws, and one of them was the alternative minimum tax. Well, that was going to get those millionaires, but they always build in the loopholes for the millionaires, and then they apply the alternative minimum tax to the middle class, and then they say, well, you know, we'd like to do away with that, but we just don't know how to do away with that. I mean, we put the law in, but we don't know how to remove the alternative minimum tax, and so we're just going to have to leave it there till we can figure out what to do with it. And when are the American people going to understand that all this talk about, you know, taxing the very wealthy is simply a vehicle of getting people to vote for a politician who has no intention of doing what he's supposed to do and what he's promised to do? Certainly, does anybody think that Paul Volcker, who's a multimillionaire, that George Soros and Warren Buffett, who are multi-billionaires, really, of course, financed and backed Barack Obama because they want to pay more taxes? I mean, if you believe that, you probably believe anything. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Our guest, Melody Cederstrom, we're talking about the collapse of the world economy. And believe me, the whole world economy is shut down. Banks are simply not lending much in the way of loans. And one reason they're not lending money out is because of the first time in history, the Federal Reserve is paying interest on the reserves that are deposited with us. And since banks are uncertain about lending people to corporations, or lending money to corporations or people, while they're lending it, giving that money to the Federal Reserve, and they're getting interest on that. We don't know how much interest they're getting, but we know they're getting interest. And what that has done is to dry up all the money that should be being let out to help get the economy going. And there's almost well over $500 billion that's deposited with the Federal Reserve they're paying interest on, but they can't let the American people know that. In other words, supposedly they're trying to get the banks lending again to get the economy going. No, that's what they have to tell you. But the reality is, of course, because they're paying interest on the reserves now that they have never done before, they've simply dried up the money that should be going into loans. Well, let's go to Mike calling. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hi, Stan. Well, they're getting 8% on the Citigroup deal. If that helps.
No, that's the federal government is getting the money.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Right. And then the city group is supposed to pay them, supposed to pay the government 8%, but that is not the reserves that ordinarily the banks ordinarily hold. You know, and they could ordinarily maybe deposit, I think they ordinarily had about $8 billion on deposit. And then they could lend out all the rest of the money and, of course, make a tremendous profit on the, by the use of the fractional reserve system. But instead of having $8 billion on deposit, they've got over half a trillion. And so they've simply dried up all the money that should be being lent out, and they're not letting it out. But go ahead. Did you have any questions?
I have a thumbnail overview of what I think is going on, is that the Federal Reserve, as a private banking institution, of course, commingled with the government now and all along, has set up its own perpetual, infinite, vast, whatever other words you want to include there, a perpetual money-making machine for themselves, where they loan out phony money called credit, and real money created off the backs of the labor nationwide and, of course, worldwide, as real money comes back to them, enriching them in perpetuity.
I think we have to understand that real money is an asset, something of inherent value. And so when they foreclose on a home, they get something of inherent value in return for having let fiat money. Do you have any thoughts at all upon what Mike was saying, Melody?
I agree with him. And, it's the same way as the housing, and you're right. You know, they get the real assets.
And then they foreclose on a farm, they foreclose on a factory, and this is what they're doing. Of course, the larger banks are gobbling up the smaller banks, and so many banks are simply being absorbed, along with, of course, all the deposits in that bank, and the rich get richer and the poor get richer. And this is what happens, not in a free society, but in a corporate socialist society, which we have, with a fiat money system, which allows some people to create money out of nothing, which is what the banking system does. And until people understand fractional reserve banking, which is so hard to understand, nothing really makes sense. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Mike, go right ahead.
Well, the whole thing is quite ingenious. It's taken them 100 years now since they had their first meeting on Jekyll Island, and then, of course, 1913, that famous year. And they've done an admirable job. Evil as it is, it's amazing what they've done. It's the intelligence that had to go in behind it, and the ingenuity and the creativity.
Well, I would like to say, I would think it is supernatural intelligence, yeah. Because I believe that there are power. In fact, if you read the writings, of course, of the occultists, they will tell you that they have their people planted in financial institutions all throughout the world. And anybody who doubts that, certainly we have a little pamphlet that's put out by the Luciferians. It's called The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy, The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy. And if you get anything else to our ministry, why, you can simply ask for a free copy of that. We'll send it along. You need to read it, and you need to study it, and you need to understand that these people know exactly what they're doing. And, of course, they are representatives of the prince of this world, working with it at the highest levels of our society and government. Anything else, Mike?
Yeah, one last thing. You were talking about Sarah Palin a few minutes ago. Well, in my understanding, McCain never was supposed to win. They just wanted to put on an election at the powers that be, whoever's pulling the strings on election cycles. And the Sarah Palin thing, she was just used. That's all she was there for. I hope she wakes up. I hope my voice reaches her somehow, if someone would ever just give her a tape, that she was used as a national distraction.
I think you're absolutely right.
That went on for weeks, just prior to when this whole bailout thing came up in Congress.
Yeah, well, of course, they wouldn't even allow her to speak. They wouldn't allow her to, have interviews with the press. You're absolutely right. Melody, do you have any thoughts on what Mike's saying?
No, I agree with him. I also believe she was just used, and but you know what? She went along with the program. I mean, you had to kind of figure out that, I would think that she should have been able to figure out that she was used.
I think she eventually did, and I think that she was furious with McCain, but she's not going to say that publicly.
Well, good.
Anything else, Mike?
Well, that's enough for now.
Okay,
thanks,
God
Mike.
Bless, and let's go to Joe calling us from Michigan, and again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. How are you doing, Joe?
Good, how are you guys?
Doing fine. What part of Michigan are you from?
I'm calling from Fowlerville. It's about 30 miles east of Lansing, but I get you in Flint, 600.
Okay, fine. They got a new a station there in Lansing, and you'll be able to get us
the
Lansing station. Yeah, but it's on low power now, hopefully by the end of the a month, end of December, why you'll be up to full power.
What's the number?
I think it's 1360 or 1390, something like that.
Cool.
Okay, anyway, do you have a question?
Yeah, actually, it's just a quick question. I thought I heard on your show, either this week or I think it was last week, somebody, it was either you or someone else said that relative to the $750 billion bailout, if we broke that down relative to all the taxpayers in the country, each taxpayer would get $430,000. Is that correct?
No, I don't think so. I heard that, and I was calculating that in my own mind. I don't think that's accurate. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean,
Melody, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I don't.
Let's figure.
Said for a long time, why don't they just give each American $1 million, and that'll keep the economy going for a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking the stimulus checks were like $600 per, $600 to $1,200 per family, and that came out, they wouldn't deficit like over $100 billion on that. So somebody said that it would be, of the $850 billion, that we would each get each taxpayer would get $430,000.
No, I think that is really exaggeration. I know what you're saying, but I don't think it was accurate. I mean,
okay.
It figures this to $700,000 to $300,000 to $700,000 would be just start crossing off the zeros there. Three would go into about $7,000. We'd each get about $200, $250. Something like that.
I just wanted to be clear on that. I'm sorry.
No, I think that, I'm sorry. We'd each get about $2,000, but
yeah, we
wouldn't get that amount of money. But believe me, there is an awful lot of money that's being wasted out there. This is the great tragedy of what's going on. And of course, what this is eventually going to do is simply destroy the value of our currency. And what people don't understand is what happens to a country where you destroy the value of the currency. And what happens is just what's happening over in Iceland, which is why they brought the brigade home from Iraq and began to teach them how, of course, to be utilized against the American people. And they're going to have to use the National Guard and the reserves and the regular army against the American people when they understand that everything they've spent their whole life working for has been simply stolen from them by these crooks.
I'm not understanding this whole Iceland thing. Why would Iceland be coming against the Federal Reserve? Are you talking about their central bank in Iceland?
Their central bank over there. And happened is the bankers over in Iceland and the central bank of Iceland destroyed the value of the currency, and there's nothing to be bought on in the stores. Why? Because the store owners can't buy things from other countries. Nobody will ship it to them because their money is worthless. And so the people are just frantic, you know. They've had this very high, affluent way of life, and suddenly they're totally impoverished, and many of them are leaving as they possibly can. And right now, of course, Iceland's frantically trying to get a loan, I believe, from Sweden, something like that. And the IMF has offered to give them, I think, about $2 billion if they can raise another couple of $1 billion elsewhere. Nobody else wants to lend it to them. And so why is the IMF allowing this to happen? I mean, it would be logical just to go ahead and lend them the money and try to stop the breakdown in society there. It's almost as if they want the breakdown of society to occur.
Yeah, well, you know, I agree with you. But the other thing that we always got to keep in mind here relative to our currency is that, I mean, all the other world currencies are doing worse than the dollar. And it's like, if the dollar collapses, those other currencies are going to go down with them.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a global endeavor.
The whole world will be plunged into chaos. This is my fear. And I think that is exactly what the people in charge want, because they want to create a new world economic order, a new world currency, and a new world religion, along with a new world government. When you understand that, then you can understand why they knew this thing was coming down for so many years and did nothing to stop it.
I just want to say one last thing. Is this, when you know, God's word says that Satan comes to kill, steal, and destroy. When you look at these globalists, these elite, I mean, that is exactly their job description. I mean, they kill through wars. They destroy lives through their banking system, and through all kinds of other things that you've talked about on the show, and they steal from people through their banking system as well. It's just, I mean, they are truly Satan's servants. You know,
you're absolutely right, Joe. I'm glad you can see that. I just hope that more and more people can begin to understand the spiritual forces that energize these people who control the reins of government today. God bless, and thanks for calling. Okay, Melody, we're just about out of time. Would you like to get your web page and your telephone number out one more time for us?
Our web page is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net, discountgoldandsilvertrading.net, and our telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, gold and silver... Products a little easier to get now than they were a few weeks ago?
It's still a little touchy in the gold and silver bullion area. A lot of people call thinking that there is absolutely no product available, and that's just not true. There is product available. It changes from day to day. This week we've had a little bit of a shortage on Golden Eagles because of the short week. A lot of the direct suppliers are closed for 2 days, so the allotments didn't come through. There's Silver Eagles available, but Gold Eagles should be available next week again. Canadian Maple Leaves are available. And
hold that thought. We'll be right back.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
You have to subscribe to our newsletter. All you have to do is call 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to begin to get information on what is happening financially. If you have not yet heard my talk on the financial tsunami, you need to hear it. It was given several years ago, but basically nothing has changed at all. That comes with a syllabus that gives you a lot of information on the terminology that's used and the meanings of derivatives. And you have to understand that derivatives are what's really going to end up simply sinking our economy, because you're talking probably hundreds of trillions of dollars, if not a quadrillion dollars worth of derivatives. That's a quadrillion dollars worth of derivatives. And when they come tumbling down, they collapse the whole economic system. Don't feel bad if you've lost money. It's said that Warren Buffett may have lost as much as $75 billion recently. I hope that isn't true. The Sage of Omaha has been a very good investor in the past, but even somebody as wise as Warren Buffett can get trapped in this current economic collapse. So understand that there are real problems out there, and many of our major investors are not doing much better than the average individual as the whole economic system begins to crumble. So certainly we carry two little pamphlets we recommend to you. One of them is called The History of Money. The other is called Financial Meltdown. They're little inexpensive pamphlets, but they'll give you a lot of money in a very short period of time, a lot of information that you need to have. Then the books, The Creature from Jekyll Island, out of print, but should be back in print in another 2 weeks. And if you put your order in now, you'll get it as soon as it comes in, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, and lastly, the book Fiat Money Inflation in France. And then, of course, as our caller, Joe, from Michigan was saying, he recognizes the spiritual component of what's going on, and that's the message that is portrayed in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which you must get and read, and we hope that many of you will take it upon yourselves to distribute that book. And of course, you get a large number of them, we'll give you a good discount on them. We want you to get the book out and get people to read it. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will get my talk on the forbidden secret, because there really is a secret, a forbidden secret that was not known to anyone but the leaders, the priests, the military leaders, the emperors, the princes, and they tapped into the power that is there. And they understood how to tap into the power. And how do you think that they were able to build the Great Pyramids? And do, we were just seeing a program the other night about the Wailing Wall there, in Jerusalem. And one of those rocks weighed some 60 tons. How do you think they moved a rock that weighed 60 tons to make one of the keystones there in the Wailing Wall? You can actually see that rock if you go into the tunnel that's right along the base of the Wailing Wall to the left, of course, the part that you ordinarily see there on television. But we've been there, we've seen it. They had supernatural power. They knew how to tap into it. And you need to understand what this is all about. The talk then is The Forbidden Secret, and there's the pamphlet, the syllabus that goes with that, and then the ancillary talk, Secret Knowledge. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. RadioLiberty.com, where you can go and listen to our programs on the Internet 4 hours a day live, 9 hours a day, our satellite feed, and then, of course, MP3 and blogs. Get the information. Help us to get it out across America. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
There are many people asking questions. There are many people asking why. There are many people paying attention.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating from the void of God's creation, it's the 25th of November, 2008, and holy moly, lots of news going on. Guess what? You know that silly question that we ask at the beginning of every program? You know what it is. Well, guess what? There are people in many different walks of life now that are starting to ask that question. Maybe not because they listen to this program, but simply because the question needs to be asked. What question could that be? Where?